How do you handle temptation? Temptation is something that all of us have in our lives. How do you handle it? How should you handle it? A lot of those questions are not things that we often think about. We just flow along through life, and when temptation arises, we have a certain reaction to it that has become somewhat of a habit for us. And with certain temptations, we may react one way, and other temptations we react a different way, depending on what our habit has become. Now, one of the things that people often find in the area, for example, of sports, is that sometimes their habits have been wrong. Sometimes they've not been doing things the way they're supposed to have been doing them. Sometimes people get hurt because they're not doing things the right way. We have a tendency to have a lot of bad habits. Let's be honest now. Can we do that for just a minute? Be honest. How many of us drive with our hands at 10 and 2 like we're supposed to? Anybody? Nobody? Shocking. We have gotten into the habit, haven't we, of either driving with one hand or the other and, you know, punching the radio station or talking on the cell phone, any number of other things. Some people even trying to text and driving with their knee, you know, that kind of thing. We've gotten into some bad habits on that driving, haven't we? How many of us always stay under the speed limit? Well, we get into some bad habits, haven't we? They'll give me 4 or 5. Some people think they ought to give you 15 over, you know, before they give you a ticket. But we get into bad habits. And the same thing is true with the way we react to temptation. We have gotten into some bad habits with certain temptations. And because of that, those temptations have become sins that so easily beset us, as the Hebrew writer talks about. Let's begin in Luke chapter 22. In verses 40 through 46, Jesus and His disciples have just left the Last Supper. They have headed out to the Mount of Olives, to a garden there that we know as Gethsemane. And there in that place, when He got to that place, Luke tells us the first thing He said to them, "Pray that you enter not into temptation." And He was withdrawn from them then about a stone's cast and kneeled down and prayed, saying, "Father, if you be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." There appeared an angel unto Him from heaven, strengthening Him. And being in agony, He prayed more earnestly, and His sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when He rose up from prayer and was come to His disciples, He found them all sitting there praying, right? No, they weren't, were they? It says they were sleeping for sorrow. I don't know exactly what sleeping for sorrow is. I don't know if they were just so exhausted emotionally from the things that Jesus had told them about His coming death that they, stress kind of keeps you awake. But they were asleep. They were sleeping for sorrow, Luke says. And He said unto them, "Why are you sleeping? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation." So He gives them one of the avenues for dealing with temptation, and that is obviously to pray so that you don't enter into it in the first place. But we want to look at several things, several different reactions that we could have toward temptation. And as we look through these, I know I said we'd just be honest for a minute, but I lied. Need you to be honest for the whole time with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me now. You can quit telling me. I don't want to see hands raise up because I probably some things we don't want to know. But with yourself, be honest as we go through these and ask yourself, do I react to certain temptations in my life in this way or not? Should I react this way when I don't? Or should I not react this way but I do? Be honest with yourself. Examine yourself on these areas. Let's start, first of all, some people's reaction to temptation is to run toward it. Ever done that? Ever run toward a temptation? You know it's going to be a tempting situation, but you go running right into the middle of it. Isaiah 59 and verses 6 through 8, Isaiah says, their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity, wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their goings. For they have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goeth therein shall not know peace. He said, here's a group of people. They ran to do evil. It's almost not a temptation if you're going after it that hard, is it? And then Proverbs 6, 16 through 19. The six things that the Lord hates. Yea, seven are an abomination to Him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked imaginations. Feet that are swift in running to mischief. A false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. So here among these seven most abominable things to God, the seven things that He hates, one of them is those feet that are swift in running to mischief. Those people that run toward temptation. Instead of running away from it. Well, second group of people are those who look for it. They look for temptation. We need not be caught up in this group. Matthew chapter 26, verses 14 through 16. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the high priest, and he said unto them, what will you give me if I deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time, he sought opportunity to betray him. He sought the opportunity to betray Jesus. He looked for the temptation. He looked for that opportunity to sin. Do we do that sometimes? We look for a way to get into sin instead of looking for a way out. We look for a way to find it instead of looking for a way to stay away from it. We need to be aware. You know, the kind of thing that this would be, you know, the person who maybe is an alcoholic and they decide they're going to go get in the car and just drive around. And they start driving around and they start looking for a bar. Well, why would they be looking for a bar if they weren't going to drink some and they're already an alcoholic and don't need to be drinking and they're looking, but they're looking for it. People go looking for temptation. The devil has an easy time of it if we do those things. And what about those who indulge in it? Genesis 6 and verse 5. God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. They really indulged in temptation and tempting each other and looking for new temptations, new things, new ways to do sin. Every thought of their heart was evil continually. They really indulged in it. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13. Paul tells Timothy, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. They really get into it. They really indulge themselves in the temptations. I recall a song. Probably never heard it. I don't know. Maybe some of you have. I don't know if it was popular. If it was before my time. But there are plenty that are just like it today. But it was actually a song by Perry Como. And the song was called Temptation. And the final line of that song was, "Temptation, I'm your slave." You see, the thing about temptation is when people indulge in it, they become slaves to it. And they become slaves to the sin that comes on the other side of the temptation. But there are many who run toward it, look for it, and indulge in it. But some go even further than that. And really, we mentioned them a little in 2 Timothy 3:13. But there are those who draw others into it. They draw others. They're not satisfied to be tempted themselves and to deal with that and fall to those temptations and become involved in sin themselves. They want to draw others into temptation. They tempt other people. You think about Eve in the Garden of Eden. It was enough that she got tempted by the serpent. Then she turned around and tempted her husband. The devil didn't even have to do that. She did it for him. She worked for the devil. Drew Adam into the same sin, into that same temptation that she had fallen to. Galatians 2, verses 11 through 13, we see an example in the New Testament of someone who fell to sin and drew others into temptation along the way, and that was Peter. Paul says, "When he was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed. For before certain came from James, he ate with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy or dissimulation." He drew, because he was influential with others, when he fell to the temptation, he drew others into that same condemnation, that same temptation with him. And we have to beware. There are a lot of people who have a particular vice and they say, "Well, it's not hurting anybody, and it's my life, and I can live it how I want to." That's a lie. It is hurting somebody. There is someone else who is being influenced by your wrongdoing. There's someone else who is being influenced by the temptation that you're putting before them by your sinful behavior. There is no sin that is committed in a vacuum that does not affect anyone else. Matthew chapter 18 and verses 6 and 7. Jesus says, "But whoso shall offend one of these little ones." Now, the way we use offend today is, You hurt my feelings. You made me upset. That's not what offend means in the Bible. When the New Testament says you offend someone, it means you cause them to sin. Doesn't mean you hurt their feelings. It means you made them sin. So when he says, "Whosoever shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me," he's talking about causing somebody else to sin. He's talking about drawing another into the temptation, tempting someone else and causing them to fall to that temptation. He says, "Whoever does that, it would be better for him if a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes." He said, there is nothing that makes you more like the devil than when you do what the devil does. What does the devil do? He tempts people to sin. When we tempt other people, when we draw other people away from God towards sin, we're a child of the devil at that point. We're doing what the devil wants done and not what God wants done. Mark chapter 8 and verse 11. "The Pharisees came forth and began to question with him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him." See, the Pharisees were doing the devil's work. We read about the devil tempting Christ in the wilderness, and then it says the devil left him for a season. Well, the Pharisees picked up right where the devil had left off. they started tempting Jesus. We don't need to be drawing others into temptation. But sometimes we do. All of us have probably done that at some point or another. We have caused someone else to sin. We know they're responsible for choosing to commit that sin, but we've tempted them. We've laid a stumbling block in their path and caused them that offense of the gospel of Christ. And we need to be aware of that and do everything within our power to avoid drawing others into temptation. Another thing that sometimes people do, and we may be guilty of, some people blame God for it. They blame God for their temptation. Well, I can't believe God made me do it. I can't believe God let this happen to me, and blame God for being in that sinful condition. The most famous of this is probably with the homosexuality that's going on in our country right now. And what do they say? I was born this way. In other words, God made me do these things. No. God doesn't condemn people for being what He made them to be. He doesn't condemn people for being born male or female. He doesn't condemn people for being born black or white or yellow or red or whatever else. He doesn't condemn people for the way they were made. He condemns people for the things that they do that are not according to His will. And so people try to blame God. Well, He made me this way. No, He did not. God did not make anyone sinful. We got there on our own and with the help of others who drew us into temptation. But we do that many times, in many ways. We blame God. James 1, 13 and 14. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts He any man. God does not tempt anyone. If you're being tempted, it's not God. And sometimes we make the mistake, and I know it's just a phrase, it means I'm thinking about or wanting to do something, but sometimes we'll even say things like, there's a gospel meeting coming up in Archbald, and I might say, you know, I'm tempted to go to that gospel meeting. Well, I'm not really tempted. That's a good thing. You can't be tempted to do something good, but sometimes we say that. It's a phrase that we may use sometimes and misuse that phrase. Oh, I'm tempted to go visit so-and-so who's sick. Well, we're not really tempted. We just mean, you know, the thought came to my mind that I should go do that, and I was thinking about doing it. We're not really tempted when it comes to doing something that's good, but sometimes we use that terminology, and we need to beware of that because it makes it sound like God's tempting us to do something wrong when really we're being compelled by our conscience or whatever to do something that's right. But he goes on to say, not only does God not tempt anyone, he says then, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. That's where the temptation comes from. Adam was probably the first one to start this line of blaming God. Notice what he said in Genesis 3:12. After God came down and caught them having in their sin, they were naked, and he asked them, what's going on? Did you eat the fruit of the tree? And Adam said in verse 12, the woman that you gave me of the tree, and I ate it. God, it's your fault. You gave me that woman, and she gave me the fruit. It's all your fault. No, no. We can't blame God. Romans 7:7, Paul says, and sometimes people try to blame the Bible. Well, you know, the Bible, you know, I wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't read about it in the Bible. And I wouldn't known I was sinning. I wouldn't known it was bad. Romans 7:7 says, what shall we say? Is the law sin? God forbid. Now, I had not known sin but by the law, for I had not known lust, except the Lord said, thou shalt not covet. Just because the Bible makes us aware of our temptation and makes us aware of our sin does not mean that God, through the Bible, has caused us to sin. We need to get that straight. The law is not sin. The Bible does not cause us to sin. All right, number six. We want to notice that some people resist it. And now we start to get into some of those things that we ought to do. We've looked at some of the things that we shouldn't do at the beginning. Now we want to look at some things. These are the things that we should do. How should we react? Here's one. Resist it. 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9 says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world." Resist the devil. Resist that temptation. He's out there trying to get you to be eaten up by sin through those temptations. Resist it. James 4:7 says, "Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you." Genesis 39 and verse 10, Joseph in the household of Potiphar and Potiphar's wife, she would speak to Joseph day after day. You know, there are some temptations that you just have to face. It's good if you can avoid temptation. It's good if you can stay far away from a tempting situation, but sometimes you can't. In this case, Joseph was a slave. He didn't have a choice. He couldn't quit his job and move even. You know, he was stuck. He was a slave to Potiphar. And he had to do what Potiphar told him to do. Well, one of the things that he had to do then was deal with Potiphar's wife. And Potiphar's wife, day after day, she would speak to him to come lie with her. Not lie like tell something that's not true, but sleep with her. She was constantly trying to get him to come sleep with her and to be with her. And it says, he hearkened not unto her. He resisted. Can you picture Joseph as he's walking through the house and here comes Mrs. Potiphar and he's like, I'm not going to listen to her because I know what she's going to do. She's going to try to tempt me. Sometimes we do have to face temptation. We can't avoid it all the time. We can't always be where there's no temptation. When we have to face it, we can resist it, and we should, and we must resist it. Another thing that we need to do, the seventh thing that we've noticed that some do, is flee from it. 2 Timothy 2:22, Paul tells Timothy, "Flee youthful lusts, but follow righteousness." Flee! Run! You know, we're pretty tough as Americans. We don't back down. We don't run from anything. There's a country song that talks about these colors don't run or something like that. We don't run from anything. Well, you know what? God said you don't have to be that tough to be a Christian. Sometimes you just need to run. Run away. It's not cowardly to run away from temptation. Here he says, run from youthful lusts. Flee them. 1 Corinthians 6:18, he says, flee fornication. Run away from it. That's what Joseph did. In Genesis 39 and verse 12, she kept on. She wouldn't leave him alone. Finally, one day, she just caught hold of him. She grabbed his clothes. Grabbed his coat. And you know what he did? Well, he came out of that thing and he ran. He took off. He didn't stay around to see what it was. He fled. 1 Corinthians 10:14 also says, flee from idolatry. Run from it. Run away. Run away. God does not consider you a coward if you run away from sin. What is the old saying? That sometimes caution is the better part of valor. Sometimes retreating is a necessary maneuver to win the war. Sometimes we need to retreat. Sometimes we need to run. Get away from that tempting situation. And then we need to defend against it. Ephesians 6:13 through 18, the armor of God is given to us. The whole armor of God we need to put on. We need to wear it so that, verse 13 tells us, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. And then he says, you girt your loins with the truth. Put on the breastplate of righteousness. Put the preparation of the gospel of peace on your feet. Take the shield of faith so that you can quench the fiery darts of the wicked one. That's our defense. Defend against those temptations. Faith will help us defend it. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. He said, be prepared to defend yourself. Fight it. Don't give in. And then he says, then the next thing we need to avoid it. When it's possible, just stay out of that situation from the beginning. And how much better that would be. What if Eve had not gone wandering over there to that tree that she wasn't supposed to eat from? You notice the Satan didn't come to their house with some of the fruit going door to door. Hey, I got some fruit for you. Knock, knock. You want to buy some of this? He didn't do it that way. He didn't slip it into their water supply or accidentally put some in their canned fruit so they wouldn't know it was there. It wasn't like that. She went to the tree. Avoid it. Psalm 1 in verses 1 and 2. The psalmist says, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. Don't walk around with ungodly people. Now, obviously, we're going to be around ungodly people. We can't avoid everything. But don't spend your time hanging out with them. Walking with the ungodly. Not a good idea. Nor standing in the way of sinners. You go hang out with all the sinful folks in the places where they do all the sinful things. What's likely to happen to you if you hang out with the drug dealers and prostitutes? What are you going to become? I think about that. Sometimes you hear about how many even police officers who went undercover with the criminal element wound up getting caught up in it themselves and becoming that kind of a person. Because they went in there undercover. They were supposed to be the good guys. They were supposed to catch the bad guys, but they went in there and they got caught up in it because they were around all those people. Be careful who you associate with and who you spend time with, where you stand. And then he says, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. We've got to be careful. Where do we walk? Where do we stand? Where do we sit? It happened a lot. He walked toward that fair-looking land. And then before long, he was sitting in the gate of that wicked city, Sodom. He was in a bad situation. He was in a bad place. He was surrounded by evil. And even though the Bible says that Lot himself was righteous, sin got his family because of that. We talked about that some in class this morning. We need to avoid it whenever possible. Now we talked about there are some times that we're going to face temptation. We can't always avoid it. So when we can't avoid it, we need to watch out for it. The problem is we walk around like Gomer Pyle, blah, 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 and just wander right into it and we're caught up in the middle of it before we know it. We need to be watching out for it. Beware. Luke 21, verses 34 through 36. Jesus says, take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day comes upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore, and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. He says, you watch. Watch and pray. We sing a song. Watch and pray. We need to be watching. Constantly watching. For all of these temptations that are going to come our way. Satan's not going to quit. He's not going to give up. There are going to be temptations in our lives. And we must be watching out for it. Now we need to go a step further. We need to help others overcome temptation. Now obviously we need others to help us too, don't we? But we need to help others. We need to warn others about it. Tell them to watch out. 1 Timothy 6, 9-10, Paul warns, those that want to be rich fall into temptation. So he says, be careful. John brought that up in class this morning. We're talking about, you know, we look at the physical things. We have these physical desires. You know, none of us wants to be poor. None of us wants to be hungry. None of us wants to wear raggedy, shabby clothes. Well, I don't know. There was a time there where that was pretty chic to wear and I guess still is with some people, wear the jeans with the holes in them and all that kind of thing. But for the most part, you know, we want to have the best. Watch out, he says. If you want to be rich, you will fall into temptation and a snare. It's a dangerous thing. And he goes on to say that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And many have left the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So he warned them, and we need to warn people about the problems that sin will cause. Warn them about the temptations. We need to help those who are struggling through it. Luke 22, verses 28 through 30. Jesus said, ye are they which have continued with me in my temptation. Now, I know they weren't always perfect, his disciples, but they stuck with him. In John 6:66, when the multitudes were departing and leaving Jesus, and Jesus asked, are you going to leave too? He turned to the 12. He said, are you going to leave too? Peter said, where should we go? Where would we go? You're the one that has the words of eternal life. But they stuck with him, even through the difficult times, even through his temptations. And because of that, he says, I'm going to appoint to you a kingdom, and you'll eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones. You see, there are rewards for helping someone through their temptation. We need to help those who are struggling through it. We need to pray for those who are caught in it. Luke 22, 31 and 32, the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith fail not, and when you're converted, strengthen your brethren. Christ prayed for Simon Peter because he knew he was fixing to face some serious temptation. He knew he was going to fall, but he said, I prayed for you that your faith doesn't fail when you fall to that temptation. He says, and when you're converted, see, he knew he was going to fall to it. He told him, Peter, you're going to deny me three times. He said, but I'm praying that your faith doesn't fail you. And when you're converted, then strengthen your brethren. Pray for those who are caught in temptation and caught in sin. Don't reject others because of it. Galatians 4:14, Paul says, and my temptation which was in my flesh, you despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God. How many times do we because somebody struggles with a temptation and maybe they commit a sin, and we jump on them. We're like piranha when there's blood in the water sometimes. That's not the right attitude. That's not the right behavior. We need to not reject others because they're tempted, or even because they fall into that temptation, because we have too. But we need to bring them back and restore such a one, Galatians 6 tells us. Restore them back. Don't reject them. Restore them. And then we need to exhort others to fight against it. 1 Timothy 6:11 and 12. Paul said, but thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith and lay hold on eternal life. Wherefore you are called and you've professed a good profession before many witnesses. Paul says, keep fighting the good fight. Don't give it up. And he encouraged, Paul encouraged Timothy to keep fighting. And we need to encourage and exhort one another to keep fighting. We're going to face temptation. Don't give up. Don't give in. Don't give out. when we do fall to temptation, get up, get back, and get on with our lives. We've got to keep working at that. We'll continue growing and working on that as long as we're alive, and we need to help each other along the way. What about you? How do you react to temptation? How much self-will, self-control do you have? Willpower. As we close, I want us to think about Toad and Frog. I'll get it right in a minute. Remember Toad and Frog? I remember them from when I was a kid. Well, Toad baked some cookies. They smelled very good, and so Toad ate one. They taste even better, he said. I'm going to take them to Frog's house. And so he went to Frog's house and he said, Frog, taste these cookies I made. Frog ate a cookie and said, these are the best cookies I've ever eaten. Frog and Toad ate several more cookies, one after another. And then Frog said, you know, Toad, I think we should really stop eating or we're going to be sick from eating too many cookies. Frog and Toad ate some more cookies. And Toad said, you know, you're right, let's eat one last cookie and then we'll stop. So they ate one last cookie. And there were still many cookies left. Toad said, you know, Frog, let's eat just one very last cookie. Just one more very last cookie. And so they ate one very, very last cookie. Toad said as he ate another one, we must stop eating these cookies. Frog said, yes, as he reached for another cookie. We need willpower. What is willpower? Asked Toad. Willpower is trying hard not to do something that you really want to do. You mean like trying hard not to eat all these cookies, said Toad. That's right, said Frog. Frog put the cookies in a box. There, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog tied some string around the box. There, now we will not eat any more cookies. Toad said, but we can cut the string and open the box. Well, that's true, said Frog. He got a ladder. He put the box up on a high shelf. There, now we'll not eat any more cookies. But we can climb the ladder and take the box down and cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That's true, said Frog. Frog climbed the ladder and took the box down from the shelf. He cut the string and he opened the box. Frog took the box outside and he shouted, hey birds, here are cookies. And the birds came from everywhere and they picked up all the cookies and flew away. Now there are no more cookies to eat, said Toad. Not even one. Yes, said Frog. But we have lots and lots of willpower. Toad said, you may keep it all, Frog. I'm going home to bake a cake. And isn't that the way we are with our temptation sometimes? Whatever we do to try to put barriers up to keep ourselves from falling to that temptation, we can just undo it, can't we? The difficult thing about temptation. We've seen some ways today to deal with temptation and some ways not to deal with it. Let's consider our lives and think about how we can change the way we deal with the temptations that we stumble and fall to. Whatever temptation it is, the processes are the same. We need to find ways that we can conquer those temptations and win the battles. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation this morning so that the church could pray for you and help you with your temptation that you're struggling with. If perhaps you've been tempted all your life and you've never even come to Christ to be forgiven of your sin, you need to do that today. Come to Him, repenting of your sin, confessing Jesus as the Christ, the Son of God, being buried with Him in baptism to wash your sins away and begin a new life. Oh, there'll still be temptations, but you'll have a new strength to fight them, the strength of Jesus Christ in your life. If you are a Christian, but you're struggling with temptation and need the help and encouragement of the church, or any other reason you may need to respond to God's invitation, please do so as we stand and as we sing.